No.
It's
a big lacuna on my bucket list. Yeah. So let's start off here with two haros that's catching up that I wanted to do. Let's see, is this projector on? So the first is, we were all a little puzzled. Gabe, first of all, it's great. Welcome, Gabe. We have Gabe here. Hey, we're missing Ben. Where's Ben? Give him a minute. He should be here. Okay. The first is that we were all a little puzzled in that tshuva of the Rebush. Gabe, do you remember the tshuva of the Rebush? Defaulting to the prior year's number rather than to the external Minhag HaMedina. So you brought a raya from the Gemara in Ksuvis about a katan who got married while he was still Bekatanuso, and then they kind of renew the marriage once he becomes a gadol. Does this sound familiar to everybody? Yeah? So the proof was from that Gemara. The Gemara said that the wife gets the ksuva that she had in the beginning. Right? And we weren't sure, why is that a proof of the renewing the marriage? Why is that a proof that you default to the prior year as opposed to just a proof that Chazal were metaking a ksuva for her? Does this ring familiar? What we were puzzled about? No? Yeah, it's there automatically as a Tanai Bezdin.
There is tshuva imposed the male, right?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Okay.
Let me see if I can fix this. So the question is, the Gemara says explicitly you don't get the Tosefes that they initially wanted to do. Right? So why is it a raya from the fact that they get a ksuva that we default to their earlier agreement? It's just not clear at all. So here's what I think. I just think that one answer that you could give to this... Everybody see the question? Gabe, you hear the question? Yeah? Yair, you hear the question? So I think one answer you could... Hello, Ben. I think one answer you could give is that maybe by time the renewal of the marriage comes about, the wife is already a behula, and that she should really be getting ksuvas behula, which should only be a maneh, not masayim. And then the chiddush that the Rishonim are pointing to is the fact that it's no, al das ha-tanoim ha-rishonim kaima, that even though she's already been married and previously nevelas and in principle should only have a ksuvas maneh, no. It's al das ha-tanoim ha-rishonim, we roll those over to govern the renewed marriage, the second marriage. Does that sound familiar to you guys? Well, the reason why we don't roll in the Tosefes, the argument was that was never chal the first time. What? Yeah. That's what the Rivasha is trying to deal with, right? The Rivasha is trying to say, oh, well, there's a distinction because the Tosefes was batel mikol v'kol, whereas the Mane Masayim, I guess, is just in limbo or something like that. That's a distinction that he has to make. I don't have an answer for that. But I do have an answer at least what the Mane Masayim, how the Mane Masayim carrying over is a kind of a raya to the position he's trying to defend. Does that sound coherent to you guys? Or no, you're just confused by the Tosefes distinction? Well? Here, no, now we're good. Any comments on that or no?
It's not. The value of the proof will depend on how compelling a distinction you make.
Yeah, I agree.
If you can't explain that compellingly, then it's not going to work.
But at least I'm trying to do a little more, because I'm trying to say that it's not just that. Because otherwise, if there's just a Mana Masayim, you could say, well, that's the time doesn't, that when you get married, you automatically have Mana Masayim. Like Rashi said, right, the first Ksuba is Chas of Alva, and it's this Takana Chazal, the Mana Masayim kicks in. And I'm just saying, no, the real raya here is that even though she should only be entitled to Ksuba Samana at this point, no, we see Aldas and Tamayim are Rishonim, and she gets Ksuba Masayim because that was the intent to marry her the first time around. That's just the explanation that I'm trying to offer over here. Okay. That's one hara. Second hara is more exciting. So it pertains to our discussion of Minhag HaMedina. And we spent a lot of time going through the different, more expansive views of Minhag HaMedina. Remember we saw this Chuvas HaRashba, which is very broad, about the Yerusha case. Fans, is that familiar? Chuvas HaRashba about Yerusha?
Edomar, are you walking around the room?
No.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you very well.
Okay, I'll stay over here. So we saw the Chuba Saraswa that when the wife got married in Perpignan, we could assume that her Stam Das was for the Minhag HaMedina. And since the Minhag was that the father inherits the dowry if the wife predeceases the husband, so that overrides the default halacha of Baal Yorish Ishto. Remember the Chuba Saraswa? Very important Chuba Saraswa for Minhag HaMedina. So I mentioned this Chuba Ver Moshe and Chelek Aleph Simenai and Beis, which I thought was similar to the Chuba Saraswa. I just want to walk through it for 5 minutes right now. Now, we pointed out that there are two different ways of conceptualizing the importance of Minhag HaMedina. One is just that whenever there's an agreement, you could shoehorn in through the implied das of the parties that they wanted to follow the custom. So it's like a term in a contract, and when there's an agreement, we read this in as an additional term. Okay? That's one way of understanding it. The other way of understanding it is that, no, halacha just defaults or incorporates the Minhag HaMedina for other reasons. I mean, it just treats them as decisive or normative, you know, for some other reason, which could just be that it's too complicated to always try to create a halacha for something, right? Like, which side of the road are you going to drive on? So it makes more sense to just incorporate the Minhag HaMedina. Maybe it's just too convoluted that business practices always have to be both Choshen Mishpat and how people do business. And so just the rule is you incorporate the business practices. Two different ways of thinking about Minhag HaMedina. Ramosha here, in so the feature of the Chuba Saraswa is that he was clearly a das shoehorning in Minhag HaMedina person. It's when you have an agreement, we could read in Minhag HaMedina through the implied intent of the parties. So I think Ramosha is in a very similar camp. So I want to read through this Chuba very quickly in Choshen Mishpat Aleph Ayin Beis. Here's what Ramosha says. So Ramosha was asked about two Jews, a landlord and a tenant. The landlord and the tenant had a 2-year lease agreement. According to halacha, it's very clear that the landlord could evict the tenant after 2 years. That's just very clear from the dinim in Choshen Mishpat. The question was that because they did business in New York, maybe they should be bound by the very strict New York rent control laws that basically prohibit a landlord from evicting the tenant. Right? Everybody see this, Chuba? So how did the Shoel, the person who asked the question, how did he think the Chuba should be decided? What principle did he appeal to? Gabe? Yeah, Dina Machusa Dina. He says, maybe we should follow the Dina Machusa here, and that should tell us that you cannot evict the tenant. What did Ramosha say to that? Yeah. So Moshe said two reasons why we're not going to use Dina Machusa here. Both of them seem very strange. The first is Moshe says, well, Dina Machusa Dina is very difficult sugya, and not enough time to figure it out. Right? That's basically what he says. And it is complicated, right? Because there's a whole question, does it apply to democracies? There's a whole question, does it apply when it conflicts with something in Choshen Mishpat? Maybe it only applies when there's no contradiction to some antecedent halacha. So Moshe says, I don't want to open that can of worms. Then he says something that's even stranger, right? Do you guys see this part?
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like a good America. It's a democracy. We love America so much. We don't want anyone to think that we're not going to listen to the laws of America by getting a pop up in the
city. That's right. He says, oh, America has been so good to the Jews. Right? Bal Yisroel chas v'shalom sh'anu maktinim kvod hamelucha. Like, we don't want to even give off the impression that we're disrespecting or belittling the kvod hamelucha.
I hear this very differently. I heard that this was like, he was invoking like a fear of Malthus.
Oh, yeah?
You know, like Malthus is saying treasonous or as part of the fifth column. Yeah.
Right, no, that's how I'm reading it also.
So it's the same from fear. Like, maybe
okay, you're saying it from like reprisal.
Yeah.
Right.
That seems overly crazy.
Right. I see this more as right, so you're saying out of fear.
Right.
Yeah.
This is like the classic refugee, like immigrant mentality. You know, it's like the way you're putting it. It's like, oh no, if we say bad things about the Malchus, they'll evict us, right? They'll send us back to Russia or something, right? Where is he? Okay, why is he not here? Yeah, we have you in person, so it's like with Elkanah, right? It's I'm the equivalent of like 10 husbands, right? Or 10 children.
And he's not afraid to insult the media. He's not afraid to insult the judges.
That's true. Yeah, he's all snarky about the judges later on. I read this a little more powerfully. I think Ramosha's just saying that. We have to be Makir Tov, and it's just kind of bad PR, right? It's just not appropriate. Which is a strange thing for a posek to say, right? He's being asked about what's the halacha here, and I'm just saying it'll be inappropriate to say that we don't have to abide by Dina Malchus Adina, so I'm not going to go that route. But you might think that Yigov Adina Sahar, right? What, the halacha is the halacha here, and yeah, you don't have to translate it into English. But so it's kind of just like a funny response on a few levels. Whether you take it my way or Gabe's way.
I think this is a great thing, you know, for the fluidness of halacha can bend, change, and alter.
Right. For prudential reasons, yeah. Right? Sounds like Ramosha is saying, maybe the din for Dino Malchus Adino would be that you don't have to listen, but it would be imprudent for us to pass it, something like that, right? Something
amazing.
Although here he just says, to be fair, he just says, I'm not even going to address the question from that perspective, right? So what does Moshe say? Moshe says, so let's put Dina Malchus Adina on the back burner for those two reasons. And he says, we could analyze this instead from the lens of Minhag HaMedina. Okay? So and he says, you know, there might be an interesting nafkamina about when the rule goes into effect. He says, Dina Malchus Adina would apply even if the lease agreement between the two Jews was consummated before the law was passed, because you're just bound by the law. He says, since it's minag hamedina, so my argument would only work if the lease agreement was entered into after the law already existed. Right? Because if the lease agreement was entered into prior to the rent laws being passed, then we can't read in minag hamedina into their agreement. Exactly. So this is exactly Moshe Lashitaso, that he views the significance of Minhag HaMedina in terms of Das. I think that's 100% correct. That's exactly right. And he's explicit about that. So look what he says. He says, I think they're bound, not because of Minhag HaMedina, but he says because if the law was already passed, right, Achar Shekvar Nasa Hadin Mehamachos, Velo Hisnu Beferush Shekishe Yavo Hazman, since they didn't stipulate to the contrary, it's as if they made an agreement that the lease agreement will be in accordance with the rules of the Malchus. So you see that it's hisne stam. We read into stam adaita the din hamalchus hiskirlo. Now Ramosha says, there's a further chiddush. He says, when we follow Minhag HaMedina, it doesn't have to be a Minhag HaMedina that arises within Jewish circles. Right? A Minhag HaMedina that arises through non-Jews is just as powerful. Davar Pashit Shekol Elu Adina Matliyim B'Minhag HaMedina. And he points to all the Gemaras and Bava Metzia that we've seen. Malkam Shenagu Shelo Lahashkim, Mekabel Sadam Mechaveru, Malkam Shenagu Likitzor Yikitzor, etc. Kol Minhag HaMedina. He says, Eino Tzarech Sheyasa HaMinhag Al Pi Chachmei HaTorah V'Gam Af Lo Al Pi Yehudim. The Afshein Iguze Hanachrim Nami Humi Din Torah Bistama Kifi HaMinag. So he says, even if the Minag was enacted by non-Jews, it's still binding. Why? What's the key word here? Key phrase? Yoni? Da'adaita. There's a Moshe's point, right? We're just reading into their das when parties have an agreement. We assume they intend for it to be according to the Minag. Now, Moshe goes further. He quotes the Gemara's in Bava Metzia, in Bava Basra. The Gemara's and Bava Basra here have lengthy discussions about what happens if I sell you a house, is the backyard included? If I sell you a boat, is the sail and anchor included, etc., etc. All these rules about what gets included in a sale. Now, Ramosha says these only apply when? Gabe, do you remember? When do all those sikhas and babhasra apply? Yeah, rak b'makom she'ein minog. It's a wild, right? He says, "Aval b'makom she'yesh minog hochin achar minog." Why? Again, hatam she'bistama hu kehisnu shehu kaminog. We just assume that the parties when they're selling a house in Tinek, they have das to follow whatever the norms in Tinek are. So if you sell the house and the chandelier is included in the house in New Jersey law or whatever, that's going to bind the two Jews also. And so these sugyas and babhasra are only applicable when there's no minhag to the contrary. What do you guys think of that? Is that obvious? Is that a chiddush?
I mean, it seems pretty consistent with the, like, it's all over, like, Mishnah, and babhasra, that these shiurim are, forbidden babhasra. Like, all these things apply, and measurements are,
So it's definitely consistent with that idea that we're going to punt to Minhag HaMedina. It sounds like it's a consistent with the idea that these Gemaras are not meant to communicate like metaphysical truths about what the meaning of a house is or what the meaning of a boat is, right? They're just not like when I say I'm selling you a boat, the word boat or the halachic concept a boat includes a sail or an anchor. Same thing with a house. It's just like these are just default rules for allowing people to efficiently resolve ambiguities in sales. That's one way of looking at it. And I think that's kind of what Ramosha is getting at. Is that your sense? Cole?
Yeah. No, it is. I have an intuition that Medina is probably going to play a much greater role in like Baba Basra and Baba Messiah than would in Baba Kama.
Yeah.
I don't even remember seeing the phrase in Baba Kama. Like there's something about Torah, and presumably that's because as we said at the beginning of this year, Baba Kama deals with interactions between people who have no prior connection with one another.
I think that's exactly right, Cole. I think that's the nafkamina between these two different conceptions of Minhag HaMedina. If you think Minhag HaMedina is grounded or gets its normative force from the assumed intent of the parties to accept it, like Ramosha and the Rashba are saying, then it's going to be limited to these contractual relationships. Right? Cole?
Yeah, but I'm not sure if this is a nafkamina. I think even if you think it's an independent source of meaning, it might be only an independent source of meaning in these contractual relationships.
That could be.
And on the flip side, if you think that Mizikin or other areas
Then you could read contractual relationships into those Mizikin things also.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, so it's a difficult question, but I think Cole's generally right to say that Minhag seems much more prevalent and dominating in these Bava Metzia agreement cases than it's going to be in the Tort Bava Kama cases.
Do we see cases in which people say reliable Minhag doesn't have absolute knowledge
with das? With das, right. So my contention is that if you go in for the more robust view of Minhag HaMedina, it's not just about the assumed intent of the parties, then you'd start seeing Minhag HaMedina crop up in these non-contractual cases also. That's an empirical question. I don't have a Cole's right that at least our first pass intuition or impression is to say much more prevalent in Bava Metzia.
Not much, but did we see it at all?
Well, is it at all in Bava Kama?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting question.
Does it come up in
Bava Kama? It's tricky, yeah. Remember last year? Right. We spoke about like certain... Yeah. We could look more for this, but some cases of Poalim might be an Ezekin that arises under some sort of agreement. But that's also a kind of...
We talk about Rishon Rabbim cases. Like, things after Rishon Rabbim, like you follow... what is the expected norm in like damages?
Right. Right. Who has the rights of usage and things like that? Right.
I mean, the reason it would seem to be that like the in Bava Kamma were basically trying to carve up like a guy's physical like his actions and his mental. There's no ambiguity in the case of Bava Kamma that would seem to declare the minimum. No, the way the ambiguity is the reason Men of Medina comes up in any of these cases. Because there's some ambiguity in their language or whatever between practices. There's no analogous ambiguity in Bava Kamma.
Okay, but let me push back for a second, Cole, because you might say that the halacha has no ambiguities about when you sell a house, is the chandelier included, right? The Mishnah Baba Basra says something about it, and yet Rav Moshe is saying that it's superseded by the minhag, right? So you might say that something similar would be true in Nezikin, right? Two people...
Like what context?
You know, two people ride on the street, you might think there's some reason to think they're governed by the Minhag HaMedina Nezek rules. Or you might think that maybe the standard of Shmira should depend on some sort of Minhag HaMedina.
Yeah.
Right? You might think what constitutes Pshia would be defined by Minhag HaMedina.
Yeah.
This is a very difficult question because now we're already saying, well, maybe there are two different senses of Minhag HaMedina, right? So surely you want to say that if I run a stop sign and I hit you, under Choshen Mishpat, I should be liable because I'm at fault, right? Even though the stop sign is just a convention made up by the Medina, right? So you definitely want to say things. You definitely want to say things like that, without going so far as to say that, well, I should be chayev for grama if American law is mechayev me for grama, kind of thing, right? So you have to figure out which are these two different senses of minhag. Like, why is the minhag of stop signs going to be relevant, but not the substantive rules? So I think there is room here to try to be more precise.
Okay. I'll give this some thought. My initial intuition is that it has something to do with the fact that Isser v'Hetzer is much more of an issue in Bava Kamma than it is in Bava Kamma.
Right. We spoke about this, right? Like Isser l'Hazik. Let's bracket that for now. We can talk more about this. Right, I remember we had a discussion about this.
Okay.
So I just want to point out, I think,
why are you certain that Rav Moshe and Rashba are both like Das approaches more than like...
Well, Rav Moshe is for sure Das.
I mean, he's a little bit like Issy. Like in the end, he kind of like refers to both a little bit.
Well,
no, I think God of the Garden must have been actually stumbled with being in the Das and the Nambos.
Right, it's all the Stama, Daita.
Right, but then he's the...
Right, yeah, okay. I think throughout his language is all about Das. And remember, he even made the point that Ben made very nicely, that in order for his argument to work, the minhag had to have been in place at the time that they made the agreement. Right? Because then it's reasonable to frame their Das by the background norm.
Like, it'd just be a question of like
interpretive rules.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's not based on minhag, the minhag is interpretable when they make the contract.
It's interesting.
Because the law hasn't been made yet. Minhag only follows
I just think the fact that he keeps emphasizing Adaita de Minagair, I just think that language is so colored by this assumption.
Well, the question is how serious
that
is
included in that.
Mean,
yeah. So,
I
mean, if you want to
actually thought about this concept of the 10th law, of course not. Like, they actually think about it? No, it's obviously just like a way of speaking.
A rule? I'm not sure. I think Rav Moshe thinks that they do business knowing that these are the rules.
In the article you presented about the parable rule, there's allusion to this kind of question, right? There's a case where someone is selling a farm to their sister with a rate to buy something back. And then the guy defaults on some debt, and you know, gets reassigned to a creditor. And he alludes to this question, like, when he made the deal, did they have in mind, that this, you know, this farm, this right to buy it back is non-assignable, and therefore,
right.
You know, only I have the right to buy it back, and the other creditor doesn't, or no, they didn't think about it at all.
And we have to impute some sort of, right, we have to impute.
But if you would ask them the question, they would surely answer this.
Right.
So,
different ways of trying to read in these dots, yes, 100%. That's a nice article, right? It was a nice little...
Yeah, fun, it's cute.
Yeah. I can send out more of those when they're relevant.
My question on Ramush is, if you assume this, then isn't all of Dina Mahusa, like, just subsumed under dots?
Ah, let me get to that point. So notice there's a bit of a gap. Let me just make one point out in the middle of it before we got this discussion. So I just want to say that one way of viewing this chuba is to say that a lot of the Dina Mahusa Mishpat, like in the cases of the chandelier included in the house, is not meant to take a metaphysical stand on the ontology of homes and their relationship to chandeliers, whether the chandelier is like a subset of the house, etc. And that's why it changed those minnows. Another way of doing it. Is that Cole over there?
I blew my nose. I'm sorry. Sorry.
It's really so loud.
Oh my goodness.
It's
a cold.
It's a bit of a cold.
That's right.
The other way of viewing this emotion, I think, is to say, maybe those Dinim actually are taking an ontological view about the essence of homes, just that kol tanai shel malkayim, right? Meaning the parties have the power to implicitly contract around that. So yes, the halacha is saying that a chandelier is part of the Platonic home, but if I tell you that I'm selling the home without the chandelier, that's valid. And then when I do that, when I just sell you a home inside a society where homes are sold without chandeliers, it's as if I said, I'm not selling you the halachically metaphysical home, I'm selling you that minus the chandelier. You see, that's just two different ways of trying to understand why the Gemara makes a big deal about these things, only to have them replaced by Minhag HaMedina. The first view is very deflationary about why the Gemara discussed them in the first place. But that's just like a default rule, right? The second one is saying, no, the Gemara is communicating some like halachic man content about the nature of all these commodities, but and if you're in a society which sees things one way, then we just assume that you have intention to override the halachic metaphysics. Do you see that? Just two ways of making sense of this. Okay. Now, carry on in the Rav Moshe, actually. So Rav Moshe, there's a whole assumption here that's a little problematic. Remember, Rav Moshe said, we're not dealing with Dina D'Malchusa Dina, but we could solve the case through Minhag HaSochrim. He recognized that there's a nafkamina between the principles in the case where the contract was entered into before the law was passed. If it's Minhag HaSochrim, it had to be applicable at the time of the agreement. If it's Dina D'Malchusa, they would be bound by it even if it was passed later, after the agreement was executed. But it's a huge leap, conceptually, and based off the evidence, to argue that Minhag HaMedina applies to laws. Usually you assume Dina D'Malchusa Dina is about laws. Minhag is about customs. So what justifies Rav Moshe's move from a rule in Halacha that applies to Minhagim to applying it to a case of a legal rule? Okay.
It feels perfectly intuitive. If we're in a DAS framework, then right, Minhag HaMedina is what the market believes to be true. But if something's explicitly written as a rule for that locality, then obviously that's...
Yeah, I think that's a great point, right? Maybe Rav Moshe's Lishitaso here, that all we care about is about das, and das, so the parties didn't specify, we have to figure out, we have to reconstruct what they meant, and that could either point to custom or point to law, and arguably written law is a better way of reconstructing their das. So Rav Moshe seems to say that, he says, Lachin vada elogara din amalfus, right? Surely the law is not worse than custom. Shebisama hu kehistu adaita din hamalchus.
right? Some are trying to figure out what their sound das is, and he says, it's certainly reasonable to think their sound das is to conform with the law. The kol shekein, shekein noagim kedin amdina. I think everyone's saying even more so when the minog itself is actually consistent with the law. Right? Then you could just, it's not the law, which is normatively significant, it's the law qua setting the background for the customs that arise in society.
Almost right? Sure.
Well,
should have stumbled with Hindu identity to dinner malthus. You know, you don't even talk about not dinner, right? You have a law that happens to not be enforced.
Yes, exactly. So I think our motion might.
Our motion could still make the argument based on that formulation.
Yeah.
That Dom does the whole law.
It's interesting.
Even if it's, you know, at least, at very least, you know, split.
Right. You clearly don't circulate in Hamish in Hamish circles, right? It's the. I guess it depends how Hamish your circles are, right? It's the.
My circles could be more Hamish.
Okay. Like, you have laws against, like, pet ownership in buildings. And, like, my
right. Pets. It's observed in the breach. Right.
It's like regular practice.
Yeah, I think this Hermosia opens
honored,
up.
Honored in the breach.
Oh, it's honored in the breach. That's right. The law is honored in the breach.
Right. So, I think these kinds of cases will be good test cases for exactly what Hermosia is trying to say.
I'm thinking more of Daos and more could be Daos could be apostles. It could be also
the law. Right. Well, it's an empirical question. What do people, right?
I'm saying,
what do people have Daos for?
We're talking about, like, maybe not going to be
Right. Minog. That's right. So you might think that Minog is closer to people's minds than, like, the laws on the books, right? Unless you're, like, a lawyer or something. But most of us don't think about the laws. We just think about, like, practices, right? Like the speed limit. We just say, oh, the speed limit is 55, right? So over 55 is illegal. No, we say, like, the Minog is to go 10 over the speed limit, right? So you might think that Minog is a closer, it's a more nearby concept in Das interpretation and law. Now, you could also...
Eight?
What?
I thought that was 8.
No,
10, I think. So now, if you're like a HLA Hardian about law, that like the, then you might think, well, the law itself is really kind of just grounded in the practices. It's like what the law is not distinguished from how people actually practice the law. So you might think, well, then Ramosh is really right because, like, these two conceptions don't even come apart, right? So yes, there's like a something written in the text of New York somewhere, that like a New York legislature somewhere that says the speed limit's 55, but like what the law actually is that it's illegal to drive over 65 because like what the law is not just the thing that's written; it's right the what the conventions actually support.
So that sounds like a theoretical.
Right, so what are you saying? Wait, so what are you saying?
Meaning so like if I buy a mattress from somebody, is it assumed that I'm probably going to go to Dina to pay tax? Or
the law.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think like...
Well, I think there the answer is that... Right. Well, no, I think there the answer is to say that a practice of one special subset is not going to determine what the law is. It would have to be writ large, right? So... If the law is that you can't have a store open on Sunday, but right, it's honored in the breach, and no one, and it's never enforced, right? So the point is that that's not really the law. It's like a law that's just it was passed at some point, but right, that's the idea.
We could jump to the case where it may not have been.
Yes, 100%. Right. I mean. Okay. Good. Excellent. So this is that's what I wanted to talk about in Sermosha. Sermosha is really important because. So Ramosh is important for three reasons here. A, just the Shita itself, that he thinks he's very into Minhag HaMedina. He thinks it smuggles in. So that's one. You see this real expansion here in terms of rent control laws and defaults about what's included in a house, in a sale. Secondly, he's taking a stand on our question whether it's kind of has objective normative force or whether it's smuggled in through the Das of the parties. And thirdly, emotion makes this important move from custom to din, to the actual laws. So this could in principle expand the whole scope of Minigam Medina to the laws, it would be a parallel idea to the Dina of Sajina, just incorporated through Minigam
Medina. It would undercut the purpose of the Dina of unless you
want to
say there's some like Israel
component. Yeah, some other component.
Right.
In Israel, you got to follow Minigam Medina, even if it's not Dina the Malchus of Dina, something like that. It's not. It's right. Interesting.
No, but then it wouldn't be from the point of there being Dina the Malchus of Dina.
Right. We'd have to figure out what the relationship between the principles is. Right. Eitan.
Can we just talk about the speed limit for a second? So let's,
sure.
There is a. I think it's law, and if you go below the speed limit, you're breaching the law as well.
Yeah, you violated the law.
You're violating the law. So, but that, let's say that, could it be that the but, you know, my point is that no one goes below the speed limit unless, like, you're a Sunday morning driver.
Right.
It's like there's no, the meaning of that case, when you go the other way, that the man of actually is to never be below, it's only to go above. So, how could that translate to a word?
What do you mean?
My point is that, is it problematic to say that the speed limit laws only in the way of going faster than the actual limit suggests is an issue, as opposed to saying like going below is not?
I don't know. I don't have a view on driving too slow. I just think it depends on... I think it would depend on this question about the law versus the custom, and right? So, good. I mean, you might think, just to answer Yair's point, look, you might think that Minog HaMedina, Yair, is only relevant for Beinat the Machavero issues, right? Whereas like Dina the Machus Adina may have force, even just objectively, right? So, you usually get the sense that Minog HaMedina is about
obligations upon me in the absence.
Exactly, right? So people want to know: have I committed a wrong by jaywalking? Right. Well, wrong against whom? Right. So maybe against the car drivers, right? But you might think, oh, it's objectively wrong to.
It's sort of floating moral sense, like the idea is that it should be usher to do that, and it might be that we're going to be penalized for doing so.
Right, but that's an easy way where you could pull these principles apart, that Minog HaMedina may not determine these non-relational Isurim. Okay, good. That's what I wanted to discuss in terms of